You know, right. The podcast that uncovers the origin stories of some of the biggest names in entertainment, media, sports, and so much more. Nick Durst here, along with Joe Calabrese and Joe, our guests today. You guys are used to seeing each other on the red carpets at movie premieres, but Zoom off to do for this hour here.
Absolutely. So a couple months ago, I had the opportunity to go see a small premiere of the Bastard Sons movie that came out back in January. So it's available on Apple, Amazon, Vudu. But we're really, really happy to have our good friend on. He's an actor, he's a filmmaker, director, and he has served. He is a veteran. So we're gonna have a lot of fun with him. Appreciate his time. We welcome Kevin Intonato to the program. Kevin, how you doing today, pal?
I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
We're doing well, Kevin. So obviously, you grew up in New Jersey, Italian guy. Joe, he lives in Jersey sometimes, but he's an Italian guy as well. I have Italian roots, so obviously, it's all about the food over here in New York or New Jersey. So, what were some of your favorite spots to eat and hang out? And what was it like, just like growing up, attending Hal High School, heading over to Brookdale Community College? What were you studying there? What was your life plan back when you were a high school and a college kid?
God, my life plan back then was don't go to jail. That was my life plan.
Jeez.
I was a wild young man. I grew up in Howell, went to Howell High. That was a lot of fun. I had a great childhood. Ended up going to Brookdale for a couple of years. Actually, no, I take that back. I went to Brookdale for about a year and a half and I dropped out because I took an acting class outside of college and I fell in love. And I tried taking an acting class in Brookdale. I went to one. I was like, what the hell is this? It was just so theatrical and
Yeah.
big and weird. And I excused myself, went to the bathroom, took my books, left, never walked back. And that was it. So I love New Jersey, man. I love it through and through. It's funny, it's been a while. I grew up at the shore. I'm in North Jersey and LA and back and forth now, but a lot of the places changed since I'd grown up. But there's one place that I still go back to when I go see my folks down in the shore. And that's Wawa. Of all the restaurants, dude, I go to Wawa every time. It's like a staple in my life. I grew up with a Wawa. That was our hangout. We were little kids. And oddly enough, man, freaking Wawa. There's a couple of cool restaurants that my friends own. Esposito's Pizza and Manasquan, Sorrentino's Subs and Lakewood and Howell too. Those are all stomping grounds of mine. I always go there for a bite.
Any particular diners off the top of your head? Jersey's a state of diners.
They're gone, man. I used to go to the Regent on the Regent Diner. We all did on Route 9 and Howell. It's like the border of Howell and Lakewood. That's gone. The Golden Bell Diner is gone. So if I go down, I see my folks, my brother. We go to the what's it called? We go to the Rainbow Diner on 70, I think it is, over there. We hit up the Rainbow a lot. Yeah. And then there's a couple diners up in North Jersey. Allwood Diners is my favorite up here.
That's great. So you mentioned before acting course at Brookdale. So Nick and I, we started this podcast very sports media oriented. A lot of people who come on like sports, but it's not really like a viable career option because you're not an athlete, right? So similar to acting, when did you consider acting to be a viable path for you? And what was the light bulb moment when that presented itself as a realistic option?
Wow, good question, dude. It's never viable because you're consistently unemployed. I mean, there's harsh realities about the business. I don't put the big Hollywood vase over. It's you guys know what it feels like to be out of work. It's the worst feeling in the world. That's why a lot of actors go crazy because they can't handle it. I couldn't handle it even when I was busy as an actor. I still couldn't handle that. I come from a family construction business, and if I wasn't working 6 days a week, I wouldn't know what to do with myself. So when I moved to LA, I was around 30 when I moved to LA. I moved out there late. I booked work pretty quick. It was going good. It was considered by industry standards a working actor, but not by my standards. I'm like, this is crazy. There's people doing yoga like in the middle of the day, and they're meeting and getting coffee, and I'm like, no one works. So I made a film before I left for Los Angeles when I was 28 in New Jersey. It was called Blue Collar Boys. could have been better. It was still kind of cool, but we just really winged it. When I went to Los Angeles, I said, "No, by hook or by crook, I'm going to make it in this business, by hook or by crook, as an actor. But I'm also going to learn how to make films, and I'm going to learn the insides and outs of this business, soup to nuts, because I know most actors I know don't know it. We just know how to be actors. We know our job. So it's like, you got to know the business, you know? So I learned it. You know, I was out there 7 years, and it was like boot camp for me. It was like going to college. I surrounded myself with good producers and some shitty producers, got screwed, got burned, did okay, went through the gambit. I made honest mistakes. And I really can't kick myself in the ass for that, because I tried making moves with the best intentions. I just had no one to say to me, like, Kev, that's probably not going to work out the best. I had to find out myself, you know? But yeah, I learned how to do it. And I learned the other side of the business as well, how to sell the movies. And I made relationships and friendships with distribution companies and foreign sales reps, because I knew the time was going to come. I knew it when I was going to make my own film. And like I said, even though I was busy as an actor, it just wasn't busy enough. And even more so, it just wasn't satisfying. You know, it just wasn't satisfying. I couldn't get that fulfillment I wanted. So yeah, I started writing more, and I was like, oh, this is not bad. And then I started producing, and I was like, this ain't bad. And things were coming out. Fast forward a few years, I moved to Jersey, and that's when COVID hit. After that, I wrote a couple films, Bastard Sons being one of them. And I was just so close to it. I was like, I think I have to direct this. And I didn't know what the hell I was doing, but I knew how to tell a story, because I was lucky enough to play a lot of like leads and I guess, and main supporting. So I just knew how to tell the story, and I just kind of, you know, put weight on that, bet on myself. And that's that.
Yeah, you're certainly able to tell a story, get characters, get invested. But I mean, you have quite the story yourself. Obviously you have the stuff with the acting, but during a really scary time in our nation's history, you at 19 years old, you sign up for the Army National Guard, you go to training, you tour duty in Baghdad. So what for you made you want to do that? And you know, what was that experience like? I can't even imagine.
Well, I joined up when I was still a senior in high school, actually. I joined the Army National Guard. You guys know when they're in the hallways by the cafeteria.
I'm out for lunch, right?
Yeah. Well, they got me. I'm glad I did it. I was lost. I played a lot of sports. I did a lot of things growing up. I was never great. I always wanted to be great at something. I was never great. I was good. And I always wanted to be a soldier of some kind, but I joined the Guard because I didn't know if I wanted to do it full time. So I was like, well, maybe I'll be a part-time soldier, you know, and it worked out. Went to boot camp when I just turned 18, came out and used that money for the GI Bill to go to Brookdale. So did my brother. He's a year older than me. My brother was a drill sergeant. We both went in. And, you know, fast forward a couple years later and I got the call, you know, and I had things going on in my life at the time. So look, I was single. I didn't have kids. I was 24 years old when I went. And that made a big difference in my experience over there. Obviously my mom and dad are around, my brother, all my buddies, you know, I missed everyone, but I didn't have anyone that relied on me. I was a lone wolf going to war. So yeah, it was war, man. You know, that was a rough one, and I don't wish it on anybody. Lucky to be here, and made it back. And I think physically, I made it back in one piece. It took a little while to get my bearings straight, and really, what got me back on track, believe it or not, was being an actor, because it is the study of yourself. And when I came home, I didn't laugh at the same things anymore. I didn't cry at the same things anymore. It was just odd. So I slowly jumped back in the business, and I started from scratch because I was doing TV at the time before I left, and some films, and I went back to the basics. I think I did a community theater piece in Atlantic Highlands, First Avenue Playhouse, it was called. And then little by little, student films again, short films again. And while I was building up my resume, so to speak, I was actually building myself back up at the same time. So you know, you got scars nobody's going to see. I deal with it. I still deal with things this day. I'm still trying to figure some things out, but it's a process, and I'm okay with it. I accepted it. So that's it.
Need to continue working to get the proper help for people like you. You know, Nick and I, we thank you for your service. Legitimately appreciate it. So you started your work in the business and you kind of had to put your career and life on hold a bit. So it was kind of start, stop, start again, like you mentioned. Yeah. So early on in your life, what was the early audition process like? You mentioned working small roles, indie film type of roles. In 2008, you won the Robert Pastorelli Rising Star Award at the Garden State Film Festival. So just describe the feeling of being at that stage earlier in your career as an actor, you know, working to get the auditions, not getting the roles, right? Being by your phone, kind of like having to hustle to prove yourself.
Yeah, yeah, that was an interesting thing. I never, till this day, comparing to other actor friends that I've known for years, I think I auditioned the least by far. Like, not even like, oh, you know, close, by far, I auditioned the least. I still don't understand why. There's like realities in this business that is so weird. You know, people say there's no formula to it and this and that. And it's odd because I'll book out every like one or, you know, four or five I get, which is pretty high, but I just don't audition a lot. And when I was younger, boy, that got me. And I wish I had a mentor back then. I didn't, you know, I think when I started acting, I was living in Belmar with my buddies and Cernio and whoever else, you know, and you guys know that atmosphere. So
Joe knows it very well. You
know? my mom was a Manasquan girl and she raised a Belmar boy. Imagine.
Oh, there you go, man. Squan too. Squan was a lot of fun. But you know, I just didn't know how to work hard as an actor. That was weird. How do you work hard as an actor? Like, what do you do? What do you do? Monologues in the fucking mirror? Like, what do you do? You know what I mean? I didn't know. I didn't have anyone tell me or show me the way. You know, I didn't even know what a casting director was. I didn't know what an agent was when I started. It was just like, I just knew I took this acting class and I just felt it and I didn't want to let it go. So earlier on in my career, there's a lot of things I could have done to make my life easier in that respect if I just knew how to live more like an actor. But I know I gave it my all. I used to look for work like a madman, like an absolute madman, more than anybody that I knew. The lifestyle is odd. Your entire life is determined by your headshot getting submitted to someone that you don't know. That someone brings you in, if you're lucky, to audition. You audition, then your audition goes to someone else you don't know, and then someone else you don't know to see if they want to audition you again, and then so on and so forth until they just pick you. And when they pick you, it's not if you're good or not. It's not, I've been on the other side of things. It's not if you're who's better, who's worse. At the top, it's like, who looks better for this part, yeah. You know? Your entire life is up to somebody else. I can't stand that shit. It drives me nuts to this day. It's nuts to even think like that, you know? Like, you know, I'm how old am I now? And there's people that I'll never even meet that literally dictate my life, let alone my career. So that's another reason why I started making film as well, because I have some kind of control. I'm not a control freak, but I just would like to have the control of my fucking life, you know? It'd be nice. So to answer your question, I hope I'm getting there. It's difficult to live like an actor. You have to have, you got to have hobbies. You got to have friends, man. You really do, because the ups and downs of the business will just, it'll beat the living shit out of you. And if your entire career is doing nothing but acting, then that insecurity that I just mentioned to you, the fact that someone else is dictating everything, you're just kind of floating and you're hoping and you're waiting. I'm not much for hoping and I'm definitely not one for waiting. So I just took things in my own hands, and thank God, knock on wood, my acting career is going pretty good. And then things are going all right the other side too.
Absolutely. Same thing happens in the real world. Same thing happens in the space that Nick and I are in with podcasts. We believe our show is one of the best shows. One of the compliments that we get the most is, you know, we ask great questions at the top, they ask you something, you're like, wow, I've never been asked this before. Like, we constantly get those compliments.
Nick, and I'm not one to hope or wait either. But Joe's, Joe's more hopeful. He could wait, or he could wait that.
I could wait. Nick, you know, unfortunately, he doesn't have any patience, so he'll never be a doctor. So you, over the years, you have been able to land good credits early on in your career. You know, you were in The Sopranos for a couple of episodes. You've done Law and Order, CSI New York. You mentioned Blue Collar Boys before, landing the role of Tony Suffren on Showtime's City on a Hill, working with Kevin Bacon and those executive producers. That's great experience. So just walk us through, you know, a couple of those credits that you had, you know, how'd you get them, and your experience working on set and meeting some of the people who worked on those shows.
Sure, man. Sure. City on the Hill was most recent. Takes place in Boston in the mid 90s. Fortunately, they shoot in New York. So my wife and I were living in North Jersey, and she was a series regular on the show. So she booked a series regular. I randomly got an audition for that show, and they gave me a little part, which was cool. No one knew we were married or anything like that. So that was the first season. The second season, I got a phone call from Chuck McClain, who's now a friend of mine. He's a good dude. Chuck is the creator of City on a Hill, and Chuck was in The Bastard Sons. He played the role of Guy, the guy with the mustache. He's the creator of City on a Hill. And I think he just wrote a movie that Matt Damon and Casey Affleck starred in called The Instigators. It's coming out soon. So yeah, they brought me back for the second season. Here's showbiz. Second season, I had a pretty big role. They bumped me up. I played this racist cop. They're in the writer's room and they're like, you know, we got this role that we want to play. It makes sense. And who's going to play it? No one's going to play this, especially with, you know, Black Lives Matter is going on and everything like that. So Chuck's like, I think Kevin would do it. Not because I'm racist, but because it's work. You know what I mean? And I'll take the risky roles. I'll jump in them. I don't judge characters I play. So anyway, we shot it. I think I was in like 7 out of the 8 episodes. I was in a lot of it. And it was a lot of fun. Fast forward to when it's on TV, I'm watching the first episode, sitting down. I'm like, wasn't I supposed to be in this scene? And then next one, I could have sworn I had a scene here. And before you know it, they just cut the hell out of it. And it was unfortunate, man. I made some really good friendships on the show, but that kind of stuff happens. But it turns out that with the subject matter at the time of everything that was going on in the United States, it was a little bit too racist, racy. Showtime didn't want any part of it. They didn't want any backlash. So they cut my character down considerably. That's kind of, you know, it's kind of how it goes. You know what I mean? You just got to kind of deal with it. But it was a fun time. Aldis Hodge is a cool dude. Bacon's a cool dude. Matt Del Negro, a lot of good people on this show, man. And Tom Fontana, the creator, and obviously Chuck. So, you know, you walk away with that. It is really a journey, man. You meet a lot of cool people along the way.
For sure. So I want to talk about your episode you did with New Amsterdam. Kind of took you back into your military days, right? You were a Marine lieutenant. So I'm just curious, when you're going for that role or whatever, did you mention, hey, I have a military background? Does that help at all? Or does it just come down to the look and whatnot?
I think my manager made mention of that when they submit you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, that was cool because Lucy Liu is the director of that. I had no idea. So I got to set and I was like, oh, shit, it's Lucy Liu, you know? She was wonderful. And it was a small part, if you saw it. But it was fun. It's cool getting that kind of thing. The uniform felt weird. I haven't worn it in a long time. After I wasn't a Marine, but still, it was interesting to throw back on. It does something to you, you know? I'm very picky about that. There's a friend, I've turned down a couple roles. I'm lucky that I get offers here and there. And people reach out to me to play roles of a veteran or whatnot. And it's a very, for obvious reasons, a touchy subject. And then, you know, being in a lot of films and seeing what the films look like, you know, more often than not, more times than I like to admit, you know, I give my all on a movie as an actor, and I see the movie in the theater and I'm like, Like, shit, this is horrible, you know? And like, oh my God, what is this? You know, we have no control over it. You're simply an actor. You're simply a spoke in the wheel. All you can do is what you do. So I have a friend of mine, a very close friend, that's actually asked me about writing a story and wanting me to star in it. And it's underway. So that's happening. But what turned me off was years ago, I got called up by a soap opera casting director right after the war when I came back to the business, because I was on the soap opera a little bit before then. She said, we're doing an episode as a tribute to veterans. And she's like, you've been on the show before. We'll give you a part, this and that. Just come on. I'm like, okay, you know. So I put my class A's on, did like the dress greens and everything. And it was on the USS Intrepid in New York City. So we went out there and there was a holding room for all the actors. Well, I'm sorry, holding room for the veterans, right? So I get there and everyone's got their uniforms on. And I'm like, you know, if you're in the military, you can tell if someone's uniform is real or not.
Yeah.
I got my uniform on and I'm looking around. I'm like, these motherfuckers.
They bought uniforms.
Motherfuckers. They went and got uniforms at the, you know, thrift shops and this and that. Their patches are backwards, upside down. I was like, wow, but who's the sucker? So we get out on the USS Intrepid and we go to do this scene. They're running out of time. Turns out that the director that day didn't want to give me lines for whatever reason. He's like, no, I'm changing my focus. I want to do it like this, do it like that. I ended up not talking. I was just standing there like an idiot. So here's me, a combat veteran out of war with real class A's on him. And I'm with a bunch of about 15 or 20, you know, extras that are just acting like veterans to get on the show. And it put such a bad taste in my mouth, like they're doing it for veterans, you know? And I was like, forget it. I'm never going to go this path again. I'll just shut that door. But it's been a long time since that. And like I said, there's this other project that's in the works. I trust him. I trust him implicitly, the writer director. He's actually a series regular on Law & Order SVU. He's a good friend of mine. And we'll see where it goes, you know?
All right. Definitely looking forward to that. So with all the shows you've been on or movies, which project that you worked on had the best craft services table?
Well, my mom made macaroni a couple times on The Bastard Son. So
there you go. That's the one. You know,
I can't really pass that up, man. If I didn't say that, I'd be getting cracked.
Wooden spoon.
Bar none, hands down, The Sopranos. I went to set the first day and Crafty's, you know, there's a lot of food on that Crafty table. There's snacks of all different kinds and fruits and this and that and juices. I mean, it's like, it's crazy. When I was on Sopranos, oh my gosh, I must have put on 10 pounds in 2 days. I was living in Belmar at the time. I was broke as a joke. And I was eating so much food on set. I was pigging out and I was taking food back to my trailer, putting it in my bags. I told this story on, not to be long-winded, another podcast, that I stuffed my pockets full of food one time right before I had to shoot. And they wouldn't let me take what was empty out of my pocket. So we started shooting and shit was flying all over the place. So I had to take everything out of my pockets in front of everyone on the street. There was like Oreos, Nutter Butters, cheese snacks, all this stuff. It was on The Sopranos, guy. It was so embarrassing. And it was outside. So the neighborhood we were shooting in, all the neighbors were outside watching. And there was like yellow tape and the set was huge. And here I am. There's like a mound of food on the ground in front of me. I'm like taking all this shit out of my pockets like an idiot. But they had like chefs. They actually had chefs. And they had this dude cutting roast beef. They had big trays of Ronies. They had this. They had that. It was incredible, man. They kept that real on that set for sure.
That's awesome. Yeah. What was it like for you to see yourself on The Sopranos? Because at the time, that's the big show on TV.
It was weird because at the time I actually didn't even watch the show. So when I, just odd, but it was on, I think, what was Sopranos on, guys? Sunday night?
Sunday nights, right.
Sunday nights, I was usually driving home from my acting workshops. And I was consistent on that. I was diehard dedicated. I never missed. And Sundays were shot, football, Sopranos. Sundays were dedicated to my work. So yeah, I got the part on a whim and I don't know how I really don't know how I got the part to this day. It really made me realize that you just deliver, people either like you or you don't, they don't, and you can't do anything about it. The only thing you can, the only way you can fuck up an audition is if you're nervous and you have anxiety and you're just not yourself. That's how you really mess up an audition. You can make choices and this and that. That's all fine and good, but the choices don't make you get it. They like you or they don't. And that's the bottom line. Someone there liked me, thank God. And I got the role and that was it, you know? And I hate when they say like someone beat someone out or someone, you know, actor talk, like someone fought for a role, you know what I mean? You don't fight for a fucking role. Just do the audition and you do the best you can. You know what I mean? You don't fight for anything. Nobody beats someone else out of a role. You're not fighting over it. You got your audition, you got their audition, and you got someone just looking at both of them and they pick, you know? And once that is more understood, it gets a little easier to understand the industry in that regard, you know? So, but yeah, that was kind of how The Sopranos went down.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. If you put that into perspective in anything in life,
yeah,
you come away feeling a little better. But you had total control with The Bastard Sons, right? So obviously that's your baby right there. Talk to us, really the whole process, the idea you had for this, how you developed the concept for the film, what went into, because you mentioned learning the business side of things before, the budgeting, the financing for the project, the funding. Yeah. The casting process, you had to find the right people that could play those gangsters. You got Frankie Edgar in there and Roger Matthews, who are well known. So how did you hook up with them for this project? How'd you pitch it to them? And then scouting and deciding on locations. We know we had Joe with us. He said he do a lot of locations as well, helped you with that. And really just the whole process there from start to finish, which includes then the editing and getting everything secured for distribution or whatnot. So what was that whole process like for you, overseeing a whole film from conceptualization to finished product?
Nick, that was a lot of questions, man. I'm gonna do my best to
just tell us, you know, tell us your Bastard Son story.
Oi, I'll be as succinct as possible, and thanks for asking. I rewrote The Bastard Sons. No, actually, it was a fresh write. It was based off a script that a friend of mine was casting back when I lived in Jersey when I was 27 years old. I auditioned down near Atlantic City for it. He gave me the role. He's a young kid. He was like 18 at the time. And he's like, hey, man, we got no money. I was like, oh, shit, it's all right. You know, I got out of the house and got to audition. Stayed in touch. His name is Glenn Rodriguez. He was a good dude, talented dude. So I ended up moving to LA a couple years later, so did he. Ended up being roommates for a little while. I found my wife, moved in with her, did a couple of short films together. I eventually moved back to Jersey and back and forth. He moved his way, COVID hits. I'm like, shit, we got no work as actors. Now at this time, I got a four month old baby and, you know, house mortgage just like anybody else, you know? And, I called up Glenn. I said, I gotta write something. I said, what's up with that script? So I had a really cool vibe to it. It was just cool. And I knew where Glenn's head was at. We both like are music, you know, music geared, motivated people with film. So I took a concept of these five guys that grew up together. They were criminals. There was a woman involved. He was young when he wrote it. So it really didn't go farther than that. There was a little story, but it didn't work. But I said, Glenn, let me take this concept. I see something. And I created the world. I created The Bastard Sons. Glenn was involved the whole way with me creatively. He was my backbone. I always bounced off of him and productively as well. So Cernio was monumental. He's one of my closest friends, man. You know, we go back and Joe's family. But without Joe being involved with Sons, it wouldn't have happened because, you know, he'll play it light. But the reality is Joe got all his locations. Got the Wonder Bar, dude. I mean, holy shit, you know? We're shooting in the Wonder Bar, the Red Rose Bakery, he owned it, the Poconos, his house in the Poconos, all those locations, that was all him. So he helped put that production value of a normal low budget film up there, and it matters a lot, excuse me. So he was monumental in the making of that movie, and Joey looks damn good in a suit. So I said, you're wearing a suit, brother, that's your wardrobe. And they're all friends between CERN and Roger and Frankie. I did a podcast for them called The Champ and the Tramp several months prior. Malik, who played Darius. I know Malik for years. He was on a TV show with my wife. Marco, or Champ, he played Marco. That's like the third movie I did with him throughout the years. And everyone else. Half the cast is non-actors. My dad's in the movie. My dad's buddies, all my buddies. I didn't want to make a movie that was caricature-y. I didn't want to do anything with like gangsters. I didn't want to have any tropes of any kind. It's just kind of how I saw life, my humanity, and I just wanted to give it a go. And I never had the shot. So I said, this is my chance at it, and I'm going to see how it goes. So I think non-actors are the way to do it because I don't want anybody to act like anything. I don't want anything fake. I'd rather somebody just be still and just say what, tell the truth. You know what I mean? And that's it. And that's kind of my, I don't know. Like I said, I took stuff from how I work as an actor and apply it. So a lot of hands. Yes, I did almost everything. I'll never do that again. That shit almost killed me. It was a lot. Playing the role didn't help much, but it was a lot. And I learned a lot from it. I had some really wonderful people around me, thank God. And that's the only way it got made. Yeah, I could handle everything, but if the people weren't around me, weren't just warriors, it never would have went anywhere, you know? So after we made the film, even the later courses, Nick Larabir is my editor. He really was like the visionary. He took all the footage we shot and he made that movie. He assembled it. So by the time I went to his house, we sat down and I was like, all right, here we go. Oh, we didn't fuck this up, you know? And I watched it and I'm like, wow. I was like, holy shit, we did it, you know? And he put it together in a way that I didn't even notice. You know, I didn't think of some stuff. That's the power of a good editor. They're a storyteller in their own right. So like I said, good people around me. So by the time it was done, I shopped it around. I got some sales rep involved, even though I have a lot of relationships with distributors and whatnot, to try to swing higher. I said, maybe there's distributors I don't know, you know? So I paid this sales rep X amount of dollars. And he ended up being a bullshitter, lost money on it. And then I just stuck to my guns, reached out to a couple big distributors and just to see. And one of them bit Vertical Entertainment. And they're one of the like most well-known largest distributors in show business for independent film. They release a lot of like A-list movies and stuff. And they took it. And I was like, holy shit. So here's the funny thing, fellas. I got rejected by almost every single film festival. Even like mid-level ones rejected The Bastard Sons. And I go get picked up by Vertical of all companies, you know? I know the business I'm in. I know the medium. I know how the business thinks. But I'm not making movies and I'm not creating art and I'm not an actor for the business. I do what I do for you guys and anyone else that would be interested in being moved by a movie or a series or anything like that. That's what I do. So when I was getting rejected by these festivals, yeah, at first I was like, you know, what the hell? But then I'm like, you know what, man? I get it. You know, some people might be offended by my movie. So be it. Like, what am I going to do? You know, recreate the wheel here. But there's a lot of people that weren't offended by it and a lot of people that embraced it. And it wasn't until there was screenings you went to and a couple other ones where people of all ages, women, older women were like, you know, praising it and this and that. It's like, wow, we really touched on something here. It worked. And that makes me feel good, really good, you know? So mission accomplished.
What was it like, the media tour? A good day in New York? I mean, that's going to be pretty cool. Except getting up so early for that show. But
that was cool, man. That was fun. I wasn't expecting that either. But yeah, it's been all over, man. A lot of press. And I'm just kind of blown away by it still. It's still kind of going. So it's been cool.
All right. Joe, it sounds like there might be a sequel coming out in the future. We'll see if Kevin's going to give himself a heart attack if he does everything again on his own.
I tell you, man, the sequel, the idea, the story is already there. It's already there. If you thought the first one was kind of a banger and a loop in the end and this and that, the second one's there. But the only way to justify it is that this is a business decision.
Yeah.
Creatively, I'd be like, oh, we're doing it. But I'm like,
sense financially.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm not going to be some jerk off. There's a lot of jerk offs in my business that just raise money just so they can make their movie. Like, that's the goal. Just so I can make my movie. I'm, it's going to be the best movie ever. It's going to go to Sunday. It's going to go this, going to that. It's such an amateur hour way to do things. And it's bullshit. And I can't look at somebody in the eye and do that, you know? The only way I would make the sequel is if financially, the first check I get from the distributor, and it usually takes 6 months from the first date of release, set tells me I should. That's the only way I'll know. Because the result, the money goes hand in hand with how many people watch the movie.
Yeah.
So I'll know by looking at that number. I'm not looking to get rich. I would like to pay a couple bills out of it. But I mean, it's not about getting rich. It's just about continuing and hopefully making enough money to sustain my life with what I have, and which isn't much, but so I can continue on. So if that first paycheck says something, yeah, dude, I'm putting pen to paper immediately, because I'm still buzzing off the first one. And so are a lot of people, and I just want to get it made.
All right. Well, our fingers are crossed for you. Thanks. For sure.
Thanks.
So, Kevin, for you, obviously, you know, you've been around for a while, over 20 years in the industry. Who are some of the biggest influences you had as far as like acting or directing wise? And who are some notable people you've had the opportunity to meet with or spend time with or work with during your time in the business that have ultimately kind of, you know, helped you become what you have become in the industry?
You know that saying, don't meet your heroes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true.
A lot of that shit. It's tough to say. There's people in my life, my personal life, that have propelled me in the business. Because if anything got my way in the business, it was me. It wasn't someone that got in my way. There was people in my personal life that really served, other than a friendship, contributed to this purpose, this journey that I've been on. And they've contributed in ways that they don't realize it. You know, one friend, you know, well, Peter Dobson, who I named Cernio's role, was his name was Dobson, as an homage to my friend Peter Dobson, who's been in the business for a long time. Just a hell of a guy, and always had my back and always mentored me without mentoring me in a way. He's a big actor, and I grew up watching him on TV. And I've seen him when I first went to LA. He was out in LA, and he's a Jersey guy, so I'm like the Middletown area originally. So we hit it off, and I saw him edit a couple of short films. I saw what it was like to go through post. He taught me all that, taught me the diligence of what it was to really be a working actor. And it gave me a lot of confidence, man. Even when I was down, not believing in myself for an ounce, he would see it, and he'd make sure I wasn't wasting any time doing that. My parents, obviously, they let me be a crazy kid, and they always say, like, go get him, go get him. There's a woman named, wonderful girl, Nanette Leonard, who was a Hollywood publicist for years. She's also from Jersey. And I met her at the Garden State Film Festival years ago. We hit it off. She was the publicist for the festival. And Nan became my manager because of me. She actually opened up a management company, and I was her client. Just that in itself was something. You know, when you don't think too highly of yourself and someone does that for you, she just believed in me. And she got me Law and Order, and she got me a couple things as well. And, you know, then a time comes where you have to climb up, you know what I mean? And she just did not have the relationships, but she understood totally. Until this day, I call up Nan, she lives in Florida, and gives me a pep talk. That's the kind of wonderful people I'm so lucky to have in my life, you know? It's not like someone in the industry, like Sly Stallone, came over and plucked me up, you know, and did that kind of thing. I muscled through for every inch I got.
Yeah.
But I really would not have been able to do it if there was those down times, which we all have. If someone just didn't bend me over and kick me in the ass and say, just keep going, dude, don't lose time, don't lose a day. So I have those people in my life. I have some good friends in the business too. Those kind of people just really keep me going. And Joe Cernio, he's my boy.
Listen, Kevin, I mean, you're a warrior. You kick ass left and right. You kick cancer's ass. You kicked so much ass. So, I mean, you should definitely be proud of everything you've accomplished so far in your life. And just, you know, it's been an incredible story getting to learn a lot about you right now.
Oh, thanks, man. Thanks. I don't think about that much. You know, I'm looking in the background where I'm sitting here. I got these stupid looking pictures. Like, this is not my house, by the way. I'm in a hotel. So most of the time, most of the time you walk into an actor's house or a filmmaker's house, it's a lot of their stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I have a hard time seeing myself on this. My wife too, you go in our place and you don't see posters, you don't see pictures of us. And, you know, it's about the work, you know, it's not about the putting our face on everything. It never was. Some people like it, man. It's all good, you know, but I am proud, but I just feel like there's like this never ending kind of journey that I'm on. And I'm constantly seeking these moments of fulfillment because I know I'll never be fulfilled. So I have to keep kind of climbing for it. And when things get in the way, you know, I just can't, I can't let it hold me up. You know, I've been through a couple of things, like you said. But, you know, on that note, Nick, other people have been through things that I haven't been through.
Sure.
I never lost a parent. I never lost a sibling, God forbid. I mean, that kind of, I can't even imagine it. You know, so everyone's got strengths in different areas. And just because I went through what I went through, and I appreciate what you said, I'm no tougher than the next guy, man. I just try to stay the course of what I'm doing and make sure I don't lose a day. That's my thing. I don't lose a fucking day.
Well, it's like Matthew McConaughey's Oscar speech. You're always striving to be the best version of yourself. You're always, yeah, there's always something available to you that you can continue to chase and to get better at. I'm sure there's still other goals that you're looking to accomplish for yourself. And I know you have a couple of other projects that you're currently working on. So if you want to give us insight on what else you got going on right now.
Yeah. I'm casting a couple. I lucked out, you know, film festivals are cool. You make great people. And I met this dude, Francesco Cardero, another paisan from New York. And him and his sister are a filmmaking team, and they made an incredible science fiction short. He saw a film I did called Malicious. I saw his. And we hit it off, and now we're talking about a feature. So they want me to play the lead in this sci-fi feature. And they're including me in all the talks and getting that off the ground, too. So hopefully that'll be this year sometime. There's a couple other ones that are on my lap right now. I don't want to mention them too much because, you know, until the scroll is there, man, it's not real. But I am directing another one called Dirty Hands that I wrote as well. I wrote that over COVID too. And yeah, that should be a lot of fun. That's going to be a crime action film, hopefully shooting in Chicago in October.
Awesome. So Kevin, you know, my family, I have some actors in my family.
Yeah.
You know, Joe and I, we were in middle school drama. So the big question really just becomes like, is there going to be a role for us in one of your future projects?
Yeah, you got my word. If Bastard Sons gets made, I'm serious. If Bastard Sons get the sequel gets made, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I'm not going to pay you shit.
That's fine.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'll come for your mom's macaroni. That's
there you go. No, I'll do the best I can by you, but it's it needs to be a bigger movie. The story gets a lot bigger. So in order to do that movie right, I still make things. I'll talk about how I budget if you want to hear that stuff.
Sure.
But I follow I call a smart budget business model. Some people refer to that. You hear like low budget, you know? Yeah, everything's one person's low budget is another person's high budget. I've heard people's like, oh, that movie's low budget. Like low budget's $1 million. I can make 3 movies for $1 million. You know, like that's the thing. So a smart budget, that is no one's getting rich, you know. You're in it to win it, you know. And this business, if you're considered a working actor or a working crew member, which to me, I feel like we're on the same tier, because without one or the other, the movie's not getting made. You make money in volume, just like any other job, right? You just got to keep working. Actors make a little more money sometimes, and then it dips down because you're not working, and it comes back. So smart budget is really working within your means, and not anyone that comes into the project knows they're not going to get rich. Everyone gets paid, but no one's going to get like a payday. And if you can keep those costs as low as possible, and you have the right people involved, it's possible to make a movie like, say, The Bastard Sons for X amount of dollars, or The Bastard Sons for $2 million. And if you do it the right way, you could have the same movie. Because ultimately, when it sells, it's going to make this much money. So if you make a movie for $2 million and it sells for $2 million, you know, it's a wash. You make a movie for $150,000 and it sells for $2 million, your investors are like patting you on the back and saying, when's the sequel?
Yeah. You know?
So that's the goal. I kind of like the idea of the business aspect of it. And if I could provide that shit, if I can make people money, man, off of my art. Oh my God. I mean, that's awesome. You know, I love the idea of that. I love it. Not as much as acting, but I still love it. And that's kind of what I pride myself on doing if I'm going to take the responsibility of producing a project. Yeah.
So Kevin, in your life or your career, what would you say is your, you know, I'm right moment? What I mean by that is a time or place where you wanted to pursue something. You asked somebody for advice. They said, Kevin, I don't think you should do that. That's a bad idea. And you were like, you know what? I'm going to do it anyway. And in the end, you'll see why it is that I know I'm right.
It was Chuck McLean, about 4 years ago, actually, because no one told me I shouldn't be an actor. I didn't get that. I didn't get rejected. I don't have that in me to be like, I'm going to prove them wrong. I have no one to prove wrong. I'm lucky enough to have people around me that say, go kick some ass. You know what I mean? I'm lucky. But I also held myself back because growing up in a family construction business, we hit hard times. And I know what hard times feels like. And I remember saying, even to my dad, I'm like, I'm never going to own a business ever, ever. I'm never going through this ever, man. I'm going to be an employee the rest of my life. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I said it. But I felt it in me. I knew it. I got a piece of my own man in me. I knew that I wanted to own something. So I denied it for a long time. Even when we made Blue Collar Boys in Jersey, I didn't own it. I was a part of it. So before COVID, I was bubbling with, I have to do something. I know I'm going to make these films. I'm going to make these films. I was prepping for it. But I was always working with people. It was always co-productions. I never helmed it. It wasn't my name. It wasn't my investors. And classic line from Chuck McLean one time. He was over the house. We were talking. I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, I was stressing. I'm like, I just feel like I'm bugging. And I just feel like I got to do it. Like, I just feel like I got to do it. And he's a heavy smoker. And he's from Boston. And I'll never forget. He's just sitting there. He goes, just fucking do it, kid. And I was like, you know what? You're right. I should just fucking do it. And that was it. The Bastard Sons was born. And that was the best advice. That was it. I knew I was right. I knew I should have done it. It was in me the whole time. I just needed that little, and I got it from Chuck. And that was that.
I'm so happy you had the pen handy as a prop. That was great. Well, Kevin, before we let you go, I just want to say my uncle also owns his own contracting business and stuff like that. We do a lot of work in Brooklyn stuff. And I came across hard times the last couple of years myself, and he was kind of there for me. So kind of familiarity with what you're going through. But, you know, they say hard times breed better men. In your case, that's exactly what's going on. You keep going. There's no doubt in my mind that you're going to have a lot of great things to continue working on into the future. I'm sure you'll have more features being made. Nick and I will be in that. We'll work for you. We'll work to prove ourselves. And, you know, hopefully the big bucks will come follow after that. But Kevin, we thank you for your time. We really appreciate it. You guys have been nothing but great to me. I'm very happy I got to the opportunity to come to the Bastard Sons, that small premiere in Jersey. Happy to make friends. But what we do here is we always give our guests the last word. So if there's anything else you would personally like to share, promote for yourself. We know you're very modest and humble, but if that's the case, you know, by all means, go ahead. And we appreciate your time. We wish you the best of everything moving forward, you and your wife.
Wow. Thanks. Thanks, guys. Thanks so much. Thanks for the time. Thanks for the wonderful thought out questions. I appreciate it. I feel guilty sometimes because I don't get a chance to ask you guys questions, but hopefully in the future, we'll have more conversations and I can find a little more about you. So thanks. Look, if anybody's interested in my career, my life, they go hand in hand. They can find me on Instagram. If they can spell my name the right way, good luck. It's Kevin Interdonato. And I don't need to promote anything, man. If I was going to leave it anything, if anyone was watching this, I would just leave them with this. I'm just like you, and I'm nothing special. I'm really not. And I'm going to sit up here like these people, these fake gurus on social media acting like you have to do this and you have to do that. just do yourself the service and the justice. If you're feeling something so strongly that it drives you fucking crazy, then just do it. Just have the balls and do it. And you'll be happier and you can sleep at night if you did. Don't be afraid to fail.
All right. Great last words. Kevin, we appreciate your time. Everybody go watch The Bastard Sons. Great movie. And Kevin, thank you for your time. That's going to do it here for this episode of You Know I'm Right. For our very special guest, Kevin, my co-host, Joe, I'm Nick. And this has been You Know I'm Right.